Rincewind was not intensively familiar with women. Quite a lot of his life that hadn't been spent at high speed had been passed within the walls of Unseen University, where women were broadly put in the same category as wallpaper or musical instruments. Interesting in their way, and no doubt a small but important part of the proper structure of civilization, but not when you got right down to it essential. On these occasions, when he had spent some time in the intimate company of a woman, it was generally when she was trying to either cut his head off or persuade him to a course of action that would probably get someone else to do it. When it came to women, he was not, as it were, capable of much fine-tuning. A few neglected instincts were telling him that something was out of place, but he couldn't work out what it was. The one addressed as Darlene strode down the cart with a decisive and rather aggressive air. Rincewind pulled his hat off, respectfully. "Are you carrying the raw prawn?" she demanded. "Me? Certainly not, miss. No prawns at all. If I can just lie low until we're a few streets away, that's all I ask." "You know what this is, don't you?" "Yes, miss, the carnival," Rincewind swallowed. "No worries there. Everyone likes dressing up, don't they?" "But are you telling me you really think, I mean, we... What are you staring at my hair for?"
I was wondering how you get it so sparkly. Are you on the stage at all?"
"We're moving, girls," Letitia called back. "Remember, pretty smiles. Leave him alone, Darlene. You don't know where he's been."
The third woman, the one the others had called Neolette, was watching him curiously, and Rincewind felt that there was something not right about her. Her hair wasn't drab, but it certainly appeared to be when compared with that of her colleagues. She didn't seem to have enough makeup. She seemed, in short, slightly out of place. Then he caught sight of a watchman ahead and flung himself below the edge of the cart. A gap in the boards gave him a view, as the cart turned the corner, of the waiting crowds. He'd been to quite a number of carnivals, although not usually on purpose. He'd even attended Fat Lunchtime in Genua, generally regarded as the biggest in the world, although he vaguely recalled that he'd been hanging upside down under one of the floats in order to escape pursuers. But right now he couldn't quite remember why he'd been chased, and it was never wise to stop and ask. Although Rincewind had covered quite a lot of the disc in his life, most of his recollections were like that, a blur. Not through forgetfulness, but because of speed. This looked like the usual audience. A real carnival procession should only take place after the pubs have been open for a good long time. It adds to the spontaneity. There were cheers, whistles, jeers, and catcalls. Up ahead, people were blowing horns. Dancers whirled past Rincewind's peephole. He sat back and pulled a swathe of taffeta over his head. This sort of thing always took up a lot of watch time, what with pickpockets and so on. He'd wait until they were in whatever bit of waste ground these things always ended up in, and drop quietly out of sight. He glanced down. These ladies were certainly into shoes in a big way. They had hundreds, hundreds of shoes, all lined up, peeking out from under a heap of women's clothing. Rincewind looked away. There was probably something morally wrong about staring at women's clothes without women in them. His head turned back and looked at the shoes again. He was sure that several of them had moved. A bottle shattered near his head. Glass showered around him. Up above, Darlene uttered a word he'd never have expected on the lips of a lady. Rincewind raised his head cautiously, and another bottle bounced off his hat.
"Some hoonies having a bit of fun," said Darlene through gritted teeth. "There's always some joker. Oh, really?"
"Give us a kiss, mister,"
said a young man who'd leapt up onto the edge of the cart, waving a beer can happily. Rincewind had seen some serious fighters in action, but no one had ever swung a punch like Darlene. Her eyes narrowed, her fist seemed to travel in a complete circle. It met the man's chin about halfway round, and when he disappeared from the wizard's view, he was still rising.
"Will you look at that?" Darlene demanded, waving her hand at Rincewind. "Ripped! These evening gloves cost a fortune, the bastard!"
A beer can sailed past her ear.
"Did you see who threw that? Did you? I saw you, you mazzer! I'll stick me hand down your throat and pull your trousers up!"
The crowd roared their appreciation and derision at the same time. Rincewind caught sight of watchmen's helmets heading purposefully towards them. He said...
"Hey, that's him! That's Rinso, the bush ranger!"
someone yelled, pointing.
"It wasn't bushes, it was just a sheep."
Rincewind wondered who'd said that and realized it was him. And there was no escape, and the watchmen were looking up at him, and there was really no escape. The street was packed. There was another fight further up the procession. There were no nearby alleyways, the fugitive's friend. And the watchmen were fighting their way through the throng with great difficulty, and the crowd were having the time of their lives, and the huge kangaroo beer sign gleamed overhead. This was it, then. Time for a famous last stand. What? He said aloud. It's never time for a famous last stand. He turned to Letitia. I should just like to thank you for trying to help me, he said. It's a pleasure to meet some real ladies for once. They looked at one another. The pleasure's all ours, said Letitia. Such a change to meet a real gentleman, isn't it, girls? Darlene kicked a fishnet leg at a man trying to climb on the cart, causing with a stiletto heel what bromide in your tea is reputed to take several weeks to achieve.
Too bloody true, she said.
Rincewind leapt from the cart, landed on someone's shoulder, jumped again very briefly onto someone's head. It worked. Provided you kept moving, it really worked. A few hands grabbed him, and one or two cans were thrown, but there were also plenty of cries of, "Good on ya!" and, "That's the way!" At last, there was an alley. He jumped down for the last obliging shoulder and changed leg gear, and then found that the best way to describe the alley was as a cul-de-sac. The worst way was as an alley with three or four watchmen in it who ducked in for a smoke. They gave him that look of harassed policemen everywhere, which said that as an unwelcome intruder into their brief smoko, he was definitely going to be guilty of something. And then light dawned in the face of their sergeant.
That's him.
Out in the street, people started yelling and screaming. These were not the beery shouts of the carnival. People were in real pain out there. They were also pressing in so tightly that there was no way out.
I can explain everything, said Rincewind, half aware of the growing noise. Well, most things. Some things, certainly. A few things. Look, about this sheep.
Something brilliant passed over his head and landed on the cobbles between him and the guards. It looked rather like a table wearing an evening dress, and it had hundreds of little feet. They were wearing high heels. Rincewind rolled into a ball and put his hands over his head, trying to block his ears until the noise had died away. At the very edge of the sea, the surf bubbled and sucked at the sand. As the wavelet drew back, it flowed around the splintered bulk of a tree. The drifting wood's cargo of crabs and sand fleas waited for their moment and slid off cautiously, scuttling ashore ahead of the next wave. The rain banged into the beach, running in miniature canyons of crumbling sand on its way to the sea. The crabs surged across these like a homesteader's stampede, rushing to mark out territory on the endless virgin beach. They followed the salty tide line of weed and shells, scrambling over one another in their search for a space where a crab can proudly stand sideways and start a new life and eat the heady sand of freedom. A few of them investigated a grey, sodden, pointy hat that was tangled in seaweed, and then ran on to a more promising heap of soaked cloth, which offered even more interesting holes and crevices. One of them tried to climb into Ponder Stibbon's nose and was snorted out again. Ponder opened an eye. When he moved his head, the water filling his ears made a ringing noise. The history of the last few minutes was complicated. He could remember rushing along a tube of green water, if such a thing were possible, and there had been several periods where the air and the sea and Ponder himself had been very closely entwined. Now he felt as though someone had with great precision hit every part of his body with a hammer.
"Get off, will you?"
Ponder reached up and pulled another crab out of his ear and realized that he had lost his glasses. They were probably rolling at the bottom of the sea by now, frightening lobsters. So here he was, on an alien shore, and he'd be able to see everything really clearly, provided everything was meant to be a blur.
"Am I dead this time?" It was the Dean's voice from a little further away along the beach.
"No, you're still alive, sir," said Ponder.
"Damn. Are you sure?"
There were other groans as bits of tidal debris turned out to be wizards mixed with seaweed.
"Are we all here?" said Ridcully, trying to get to his feet.
"I'm sure I'm not," moaned the Dean.
"I don't see Mrs. Whitlow," said Ridcully, "or the bursar."
Ponder sat up.
"There's... Oh, dear. Well, there's the bursar."
Out at sea, a huge wave was building up. It towered higher and higher, and the bursar was on top of it.
"Bursar!"
Ridcully screamed.
The distant figure stood up on the seed and waved.
"He's standing up," said Ridcully. "Is he supposed to stand up on those things? He's not supposed to stand up, is he? I'm sure he shouldn't be standing up."
"You're not supposed to stand up, Bertha!"
"How do... That's not supposed to happen, is it?"
The wave curled, but the Bertha seemed to be skimming down the side of it, skidding along the huge green wet wall like a man on one ski. Ridcully turned to the other wizards.
"He can't do that, can he? He's walking up and down on it. Can you do that?
The wave's curling over and he's just sliding gently along the...
Oh, no."
The foaming crest curled over the speeding wizard.
"That's it, then," said Ridcully.
No, said Ponder.
The Bursa reappeared further along the beach, expelled from the collapsing tube of water like an arrow from a bow. The wave crashed over behind him, striking the shore as if it had just offended it. The seed changed direction, cruised gently over the backwash, and crunched to a halt on the sand. The Bursa stepped off.
"Hooray!" he said. "My feet are wet! What a nice forest! Time for tea!"
He picked up the seed and rammed it point first in the sand. Then he wandered away up the beach.
How did he do that?" said Ridcully. "I mean, the man's crazier than a ferret. Damn good Bursa, of course."
"Possibly the lack of mental balance means there's nothing to impede physical stability," said Ponder wearily.
"You think so?"
"Not really, sir. I just said it for something to say."
Ponder tried to massage some life back into his legs and started to count under his breath.
"Is there anything to eat here?" said the Chair of Indefinite Studies.
"Four,"
said Ponder.
"I beg your pardon?
What?"
"Oh, it was just some counting I was doing, sir. No, sir, there's probably fish and lobsters in the sea, but the land looks pretty bare to me."
It did. Reddish sand stretched away through the greyish drizzle to bluish mountains. The only greenishness was the Dean's face, and suddenly the shoots winding out of the Bursa's surfing seed. Leaves unfolded in the rain. Tiny flowers opened with little plopping noises.
"Well, at least we'll have another boat," said the senior wrangler.
"I doubt it, sir," said Ponder. "The god wasn't very good at breeding things."
And indeed the swelling fruit was not looking very boat-shaped.
"You know, I still think it would help if we thought of all this as a valuable opportunity," said Ridcully.
"That's true," said the Dean, sitting up. "It's not many times in your life you get the chance to die of hunger on some bleak continent thousands of years before you're born. We should make the most of it."
"I meant that pitting ourselves against the elements will bring out the best in us and forge us into a go-getting and hard-hitting team," said Ridcully.
This view got no takers.
"I'm sure there must be something to eat," mumbled the Chair of Indefinite Studies, looking around aimlessly. "There usually is."
"After all, nothing is beyond men like us," said Ridcully.
"That's true," said Ponder.
"Oh, gods, yes, that's true. And at least a wizard can always make a decent fire."
Ponder's eyes opened wide. He rose in one movement aimed at Ridcully, but was still airborne when the Arch-Chancellor tossed a small fireball at a heap of driftwood. By the time the glowing ball was halfway to the wood, Ponder had hit Ridcully in the back, so that both of them were sprawled on the wet sand when the world went whoop. When they looked up, the heap of driftwood was a blackened crater.
"Well, thank you," said the Dean behind them. "I feel lovely and dry now, and I never did like my eyebrows all that much."
"Hythalmic field, sir," Ponder panted. "I did say..."
Ridcully stared at his hands.
"I was going to light my pipe with one," he muttered.
He held his hand away from him. "It was only a number 10, he said. The Dean stood up, brushing away some tufts of burnt beard.
"I'm not sure I believe what I just saw," he said, and pointed a finger at a nearby rock.
"No, sir, I don't think you..."
Most of the rock was lifted off the ground and landed 100 yards away. The rest of it sizzled in a red-hot puddle.
"Can I have a go?" said the senior wrangler.
"Sir, I really think..."
"Oh, well done, senior wrangler," said the Dean, as another rock fractured into fragments.
"Ye gods, you were right, Stibbons," said Ridcully. "The magic field here is huge."
"Yes, sir, but I really don't think we should be using it, sir,"
Ponder shrieked.
We're wizards, young man. Using magic is what wizarding is all about. No, sir, not using magic is what wizarding is all about.
Ridcully hesitated.
This is fossil magic, sir, said Ponder, speaking fast. It's what's being used to create this place. We could do untold damage if we're not careful.
All right, all right. No one do anything for a moment, said Ridcully. Now, what are you talking about, Mr. Stibbons?
I don't think the place is properly, well, finished, sir. I mean, there are no plants or animals, are there?
Nonsense. I saw a camel a little while ago.
Yes, sir, but that came with us. And there's seaweed and crabs on the beach, and they got washed up too. But where are the trees and bushes and grasses?
Interesting, said Ridcully. Place is as bald as a baby's bottom.
Still under construction, sir. The god did say it was being built.
Unbelievable, really, said Ridcully. A whole continent being created out of nothing.
Exactly, sir.
Gazillions of pounds of magic pouring into the world.
You've got it, sir.
Whole mountains and cliffs and beaches where once there was nothing style of thing.
That's right, sir.
Bit of a miracle, you could say.
I certainly would, sir.
Unimaginably vast amounts of magic doing their stuff.
Astonishing, sir.
So I expect no one will miss a little bit, hmm?
No, that's not how it works, sir. If we use it, it's like treading on ants, sir. This isn't like finding an old staff in a cupboard and using up the magic that's left. This is the real primal energy. Anything we do might well have an effect.
The dean tapped him on the shoulder.
Then here we are, young Stibbons, stuck on this forsaken shore. What do you suggest? We're thousands of years from home. Perhaps we should just sit and wait. That Rincewind fellow's bound to be along in a few millennia, hmm?
Dane, said the senior wrangler.
Yes?
Are you standing behind Stibbons there, or are you sitting on this rock over here?
The dean looked at himself sitting on the rock.
Oh, blast, he muttered. Temporal discontinuity again.
Again? Said Ponder.
We had a patch of it in room 5B once, said the senior wrangler. Ridiculous. You had to cough before you went in case you were already there. Anyway, you shouldn't be surprised, young man. Enough magic distorts all physical le...
The senior wrangler vanished, leaving only a pile of clothes.
Oh, took a while to take hold, said Ridcully. I remember when...
His voice suddenly rose in pitch. Ponder spun around and saw a small heap of clothing with a pointed hat on top of it. He raised the hat gingerly. A pink face under a mop of curls looked up at him.
Bugger, squeaked Ridcully. How old am I, mister?
You look about 6, sir, said Ponder. His back twinged.
The small, worried face crinkled up.
I want my mum.
The little nose sniffed.
Was that me who just said that?
Yes.
You can keep on top of it if you concentrate,
the Arch-Chancellor squeaked.
It resets the temporal... I want a sweetie! It resets the temporal gla... I want a sweetie! You wait till I get me home. I'll give me such a smack. It resets the body's clock. Where's Mr. Poodle? It resets the body's clock. Wonder, wonder, Mr. Poodle. Don't worry. I think I've got the hang of it.
The wail behind Ponder made him turn round. There were more piles of clothing where the wizards had been. He pulled aside the dean's hat just as a faint bloop suggested that Mushroom Ridcully had managed to regain full possession of his ears again.
That the dean, Stibbons?
Could be, sir. Some of them have gone, sir.
Ridcully looked unflustered.
Temporal gland acting up in the high field, he said. Probably decided that since it's thousands of years ago, they're not here. Don't worry, they'll come back when it works out.
Ponder suddenly felt breathless.
And we think this one's the lecturer in recent rooms. Of course, all babies look the same.
There was another wail from under the senior wrangler's hat.
Bit of a kindergarten here, sir,
Ponder wheezed. His back creaked when he tried to stand upright.
Oh, they'll probably come back if they don't get fed, said Ridcully. It's you that'll be the problem, lad. I mean, sir.
Ponder held his hands up in front of him. He could see the veins through the pale skin. He could nearly see the bones. Around him, the piles of clothing rose again as the wizards clambered back to their proper age.
How...
Hold, look, he panted.
like someone who shouldn't start reading a long book.
A long sentence, said Ridcully cheerfully, holding him up. How old do you feel? In yourself?
I ought to feel about 24, sir,
Ponder groaned.
I actually feel like a 24-year-old who has been hit by 80 years travelling at high speed.
Hold on to that thought. Your temporal gland knows how old you are. Ponder tried to concentrate, but it was hard. Part of him wanted to go to sleep. Part of him wanted to say, ha, you call this a temporal disturbance? You should have seen the temporal disturbances we will have been used to be going to get in my day. A pressing part of him was threatening that if he didn't find a toilet, it would make its own arrangements.
You've kept your hair, said the senior wrangler encouragingly.
Ponder heard himself say,
remember old Cruddy Trusset? Now, there was a wizard who had good hair.
He tried to get a grip.
He's still alive, isn't he?
He wheezed.
He's the same age as me. Oh, no. Now I'm remembering only yesterday as if it was 70 years ago.
You can get over it, said Ridcully. You've got to make it clear you're not accepting it, you see. The important thing is not to panic.
I am panicking,
squeaked Ponder.
I'm just doing it very slowly. Why have I got this horrible feeling that I'm falling forward all the time?
Oh, that's just apprehensions of mortality, said Ridcully. Everyone gets that.
And now I think my memory's going.
What makes you think that?
Think what? Speak up, young man.
Something exploded somewhere behind Ponder's eyeballs and lifted him off the ground. For a moment he felt he had jumped into icy water. The blood flowed back into his hands.
Well done, lad, said Ridcully. Your hair's going brown again, too.
Ow! Ponder slumped to his knees. It was like wearing a lead suit. I never want to go through that again.
Suicide's your best bet, then, said Ridcully.
Is this going to happen again?
Probably. At least once, anyway.
Ponder got to his feet with a steely look in his eyes.
Then let's find out whoever's building this place and ask them to send us home, he growled.
They might not want to listen, said Ridcully. Deities can be touchy.
Ponder shook his sleeves to leave his hands free. For a wizard, this was the equivalent to checking the functioning of a pump-action shotgun.
Then we'll insist, he said.
Really, Stibbons? What about protection of the magical ecology?
Ponder turned on him a look that would have opened a strong room. Ridcully was in his 70s and spry even for wizards, who tended to live well into their second century if they survived their first 50 years. Ponder wasn't sure how old he'd been, but he definitely thought he could hear a blade being sharpened. It was one thing to know you were on a journey, and quite another to see your destination on the horizon.
It can get stuffed, he said.
It would be nice to say that this experience taught Ponder a valuable lesson, and that he was a lot more considerate towards old people afterwards. And this was true for about 5 minutes.
Well thought out, Mr. Stibbons. I can see we'll make a wizard of you yet. Ah, the dean's... Oh.
The dean's clothes billowed up, but did not, as it were, inflate to their old size. The hat, in particular, was big enough to rock on the dean's ears, which were redder and stuck out more than Ponder remembered. Ridcully raised the hat.
Push off, Grandad, said the dean.
Ah, said the Arch-Chancellor. 13 years old, I'd say, which explains a lot. Well, Dean, help us with the others, will you?
Why should I?
The adolescent Dean cracked his knuckles.
Ah, I'm young again, and soon you'll be dead. I've got me whole life ahead of me.
Firstly, you'll spend it here. And secondly, Dean, you think it's going to be jolly good fun being the Dean in a 13-year-old body, don't you? But within a minute or two, you'll start forgetting it all, you see? The old temporal gland can't allow you to remember being 14 when you're not even 13 yet. You follow me? You'd know this stuff, Dean, if you weren't forgetting. You'll have to go through it all over again, Dean.
The brain has far less control over the body than the body does over the brain, and adolescence is not a good time. Nor is old age, for that matter, but at least the spots have cleared up. Some of the more troublesome glands have settled down, and you're allowed to take a nap in the afternoons and twinkle at young women.
In any case, the Dean's body hadn't experienced too much old age yet, whereas every junior spot, ache and twinge was firmly embossed on the morphic memory. Once, it decided, was enough. The Dean expanded. Ponder noticed that his head in particular swelled up to fit his ears. The Dean rubbed his spot-free face. 5 minutes wouldn't have been bad, he complained. What was that all about?
Temporal uncertainty, said Ridcully. You've seen it before, didn't you realize? What were you thinking of?
Sex.
Oh, yes, of course. Silly of me, really.
Ridcully looked along the deserted beach.
Mr. Stibbons thinks we can...
He began,
Ye gods, there are people here.
A young woman was walking towards them, swaying anyway.
My word, said the Dean. I suppose this isn't Slacky by any chance.
I thought they wore grass skirts, said Ridcully. What's she wearing, Stibbons?
A sarong.
Looks right enough to me, said the Dean.
Certainly makes a man wish he was 50 years younger, said the Chair of Indefinite Studies.
5 minutes younger would do for me, said the Dean. Incidentally, did any of you notice that rather clever inadvertent joke just then? Stibbons said it was a sarong, and I said...
What's that she's carrying? Said Ridcully.
No, listen, you see, I misheard him, in fact, and I...
Looks like coconuts, said Ponder, shading his eyes.
This is a bit more like it, said the senior wrangler. Because actually, I thought he said, it's wrong, you see?
Certainly a coconut, said Ridcully. I'm not complaining, of course, but aren't these sultry maids generally black-haired?
Red doesn't seem very typical. So, I said,
I suppose you get coconuts here, said the lecturer in recent rooms. They float, don't they?
And listen, when Stibbons said sarong, I thought,
something... "'Familiar about her?' Ridcully mused.
"'Did you see that nut in the Museum of Quite Unusual Things?' said the senior wrangler. "'Called the Coco de Mer, and, he permitted himself, "'very curious shape, you know. "'You'll never guess who it used to put me in mind of.'
"'It can't be Mrs. Whitlow, can it?' said Ponder.
"'As a matter of fact, I must admit that it...
"'Well, I thought it was mildly amusing anyway,' said the Dean.
"'It is Mrs. Whitlow,' said Ridcully.
"'More of a nut, really, but...'
It dawned on the senior wrangler that the sky was a different colour on his personal planet. He turned round, looked, said, "'Moo!' and fell gently to the sand.
"'He didn't quite know what's happened to Mr. Librarian,' said Mrs. Whitlow in a voice that made the senior wrangler twitch, even in his swoon.
The coconut opened its eyes. It looked as if it had just seen something truly horrific, but this is a normal expression for baby orangutans, and in any case, it was looking at the Dean.
Eek!
It said.
Ridcully coughed. Well, at least he's the right shape, he said. And, you, Mrs. Whitlow, how do you feel?
Said the senior wrangler.
Very well indeed, thank you, said Mrs. Whitlow. This country agrees with me. I don't know whether it was the swim, but I haven't felt quite so buoyant in years. But I looked around, and there was this dear little ape just sitting there.
Ponder, would you mind just throwing the senior wrangler in the sea for a moment? Said Ridcully. Nowhere too deep. Don't worry if it steams.
He took Mrs. Whitlow's spare hand.
I don't want to worry you, dear Mrs. Whitlow, he said, but I think something is shortly going to come as a bit of a shock to you. First of all, and please don't misunderstand me, it might be a good idea to loosen your clothing. He swallowed. Slightly.